don't tell the people
this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Steps up, looking to his right, and the pass intercepted by the Giants at the 40-yard line. Intercepted by the Giants. Corey Webster got the pick, and he's tackled at the Packer 34.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
What's up? 405, call his wife, and hey, how we doing on this Wednesday morning? The Wednesday morning of panic. Everyone panic. The Mets have no chance against the Braves. Look at what happened last night. What a debacle. There's that Severino we know and love and know so well. I'm not sure. I feel like I put those words together poorly. But you get the idea. We've seen him before with the Yankees in the postseason. He can't even remember what time the game starts. And there he was last night, unable to get through, unable to make that final pitch. Long at bats, bloop hits, home runs. Unable to give them that performance they desperately needed. The offense doing nothing. Unable to come through when the mistakes were made by the Braves, and the Braves pounce on the mistakes made by the Mets, throwing the ball into the outfield, overthrowing cutoff men, and ultimately, it sounded and felt and looked a lot like what we have seen, what everyone feared, what everyone talked about, what we've been talking about the last couple of days, over and over again about the Braves. This is the time. We need payback. Sick of the same old Mets. Going back to 1998 and 2001 and all the different times the Braves have snuffed out a season, just like 2 years ago. Oh, and can you compare this rotation to that rotation? And can you compare this team to that team? And then Gelb on the broadcast talking about, well, I mean, this team's different. They're having fun this year, and they were tight 2 years ago. And everyone was waiting for this Met team who has shown amazing resiliency. This Met team who has had the best record in baseball since the middle of June, the best ERA from the starting staff since the middle of June. A team that has always bounced back, trying to make it different. Even without Lindor, who was available to pinch hit in the ninth inning, never got around to him. But hopefully that bodes well for the idea of him playing either in the rest of the series if it takes place. And hopefully Major League Baseball comes to its senses and at least figures out a way to play one of these games somewhere else besides Atlanta in the middle of a hurricane. And avoid a doubleheader on Monday before the postseason starts. Or whether it's on Friday night against Milwaukee, this team has to bounce back. And they're going to get these games against the Braves one way or another, by hook or by crook. They're going to either play on a neutral site in the next 2 days. They're going to play a doubleheader on Monday. The circumstances dictate that these games, it is very unlikely, especially now with the Met loss in game one, that they are going to not need to play these games against Atlanta. They would need a 3-game lead over Atlanta. They would have to go sweep Milwaukee, and Atlanta would have to lose 2 out of 3 to a floundering, even though they got a win yesterday, a floundering Kansas City Royals team. That's the only scenario where it's meaningless for the Mets. And then you just get to the idea that right now with the loss last night from the Diamondbacks, that Atlanta could use the games just to try and make it in as the third wild card with the Diamondbacks. So one way or another, you are going to play these games against Atlanta, and most likely they're going to matter for you. And they're going to have to find a way to stop this nonsense that does happen when they go to that building. And last night did nothing but reinforce the same nonsense that we have seen from this team when they play the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves have owned them for forever, and last night did nothing to help it. It only reinforced it. But again, I'll say it. I've said it once. I'll say it again. This season and this Met team has been defined by how they bounce back from moments like this. Last night will not define them. They had a 2-game cushion. Now they have a 1-game cushion. This season and this series even will not be defined by last night. It'll be defined by how they bounce back. They've had these moments before. It was rock bottom 6 games into the season. It was rock bottom having meetings after getting embarrassed. Jorge Lopez throwing his glove into the stands. It was rock bottom. It was tough goings when you're down 4 games against the Braves a month ago. and you blow that game in late innings to Arizona. And here they are from that moment. Forget all the other stuff. From that moment, four games out against the Braves a month ago to being two games up heading into this series, now one game up after one, it's how they respond. It's what they've done all year. And I sense from the Met fan the fear. And you knew it would be here. You knew all it would take. As much confidence as they like to exude, and I took a bunch of phone calls at 888-808-1019 about how confident, and this team is different, and I believe in them, and the lineup, and the rotation's actually better than Scherzer and DeGrom was 2 years ago, and this and that, and all the confidence that came from the Met fan would be wiped away with one loss. And you just sensed it, and here we are. And it's time to get behind your team because they've shown you at every opportunity this year that they do bounce back in moments like this. Even ugly games like yesterday, where the offense is a no-show, where Pete Alonso continues to struggle, where Vientos and his home run are really the only offense in the game, where you throw a ball away, where you make a mistake and the other team bounces on it. Every time they've come across a situation like that, they've bounced back. That's why you were so confident. Don't lose it now. And then we'll get to the Yankees, who had a miserable night as well, as they are unable to clinch, losing the game to Baltimore. And obviously, they continue to get some of the stuff that just drives the fan base crazy. And I understand why. Right? Verdugo being in the lineup makes absolutely no sense. You're coming off a game where he hit a home run on Sunday, then you get a day off against a right-handed pitcher, and we know that he's much better from the left side, and instead Verdugo's out there. Verdugo hits into the most obvious double play of all time, the most predictable double play of all time in the, I think it was the fourth inning when they had two guys on, nobody out. Gleyber Torres makes another boneheaded play and heads for home on a play at the plate after the catcher tries to get Juan Soto, who shouldn't have been trying to get to second base anyway, and goes back to the base, and when the catcher throws the second, breaks for home, he's out by a mile, gets into a rundown, and ruins an opportunity to have second and third with Judge up, who's probably going to get walked, obviously. So let's just say base is loaded with Wells up with a pitcher on the ropes in an inning where Gleyber got his third hit of the game. He's been killing it. Such is the experience that is Gleyber Torres. Three hits in this game. He's been one of the best leadoff hitters in the sport for a month running. He's the one guy who consistently gives them good at-bats, and yet he's still so prone to these mistakes, whether it's on the bases, whether it's in the field. You could just sense it coming. And it always kills them. It always kills them. Other guys can make that base-running blunder, and maybe the Yankees come back. Not when it's Gleyber Torres doing it. Other errors might just lead to an extra runner, but they get out of it. Not Gleyber Torres. You know runs are scoring, like it happens every single time. But that doesn't change the fact that the Yankees, unlike the Mets, went into a position of extreme strength. And the reaction to the fan base, from the fan base, that it's just, it drives me absolutely nuts. You can't throw a guy like Meza into the game in a two-run deficit. No, we got to throw our best pitchers at every point. Otherwise, they're punting the game. They're up six games with six to play heading in. We talked about how this series really wasn't what we thought it was going to be. We thought the series was going to be the entire season. It's an afterthought. I mean, sure, you want to play well. Sure, you want the right guys in the lineup. Sure, you don't want to see boneheaded plays on the base path. But ultimately, this Yankee team is in excellent position. And it was one game. And they haven't been the bumbling idiots that they were 2 months ago. This is a team that right now, like we talk about them, the fan base talks about them every time something like this happens, like they're the gang that can't shoot straight, that like they're a bunch of morons out there. Like I just saw a headline for, I guess, John Boy and Talking Yanks did like a live thing after the game. Are the Yankees as stupid as they are good? And I understand the point, but the second line is as good because they have the best record in the American League since July 27th. They're just coming off a 5-1 homestand, road trip, excuse me, on the West Coast. They haven't been playing. They've won, what, 5-6 series in a row. They lost one game to Baltimore. Like, they've been playing excellent baseball. They were 2 months ago, they were down three games. They came into this series up six. They made up nine games in 2 months. The panic that has set in from both fan bases, I don't get it. Have faith in your Mets and stop with the Yankees. They're about to win this division and be the one seed heading into the playoffs. Now, can they lose in the postseason? Of course they can. They do it typically every year. But we overreact to everything. It's crazy. So it's Overreaction Monday, even in Major League Baseball. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Maury in Belmore. Tonight is your night, bro.
Oh, tonight is your night, bro. Overreaction Wednesday, but it's the same story. The captain finally called him out and said, enough is enough. You cost us potentially the game. Let's not make this happen in the playoffs. That's all I'm saying.
Of course. Without question, you can't have these mistakes in the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. And again, I just want to say this because I want to make it clear. Gleyber Torres made the more dumb base running play, but yep. Juan Soto made a bad base running play just as the same. Like,
yeah.
He should not have head to second base. There is zero reason. One,
especially if you're losing.
You're down. Judge is coming up. There is no reason to take any chance to try and get to second base with Aaron Judge behind you in two outs. Because it's just giving an easy decision to the manager to take the bat out of the best hitter on the planet. And even if you think he's going to walk him anyway, then why risk going to second base and possibly getting out of the inning? It makes zero sense.
Makes no sense.
And if you watch the play, I'm not convinced that if Gunnar Henderson didn't realize that Gleyber Torres was going to be out by a mile, so he jumped in front of the ball early and threw home, if he stays on the bag and tries to tag out Soto might be out there.
He might have been out.
This whole thing might be a moot point. If Gleyber Torres never breaks for home, there's a chance Soto's tagged out at second base. Like, it just makes no sense. It makes no sense sometimes what they do.
Maybe this is crazy. The Maharishi, you believe in the power of positivity.
I believe in the power of positivity.
I do. I think it's important. The power of positivity. Inhale the positive, exhale the negative is what
they say. And the fan, and thank you for the call, Maury. And the fan base, like, there, it's they love the negativity. Love it. It drives me. We talk about, like, and I love it too, because I get a lot of it because I'm apparently a Yankee shill. So I get a lot of it. And this is Yankee Hot Stove. Welcome. 888-808-1019. I get a lot of it. So I get bombarded by a lot of stuff. And it's always like, oh, the team's never made mistakes like this before. Not under Torrey. Not under even Girardi. No one made mistakes like this. Only Boone makes mistakes. Only Boone Yankees make mistakes. Okay. I'm sorry. Was I somewhere else, or was I watching the Yankees as Chuck Knobloch just pointed to the first baseline as a ball just rolled on the floor and an extra run scored that cost them a game in the 98 ALCS? Did I miss that? Did I dream that? Did I make that up? Did that actually happen? Alex, I know you're a bit young. Do you remember Chuck Knobloch just like staring off into space? Let's not make revisionist history. Do the Yankees do boneheaded things and make mistakes? Absolutely. Are they the only team who do it? No. Are they the only Yankee team that's ever done it? No. I just gave you a prime example of the 98 Yankee. I can see Chuck Knobloch right now with his arm extended, chewing gum, just staring at the umpire while the Indians are rounding the bases. But it never happened under anybody else. Only Boone. Boone didn't have Paul O'Neill, Derek Jeter, and those guys to come through. Andy Pettit. That's what he needs. And they better be there for him this year because he's got as good a chance as ever. Richard in Manhattan. What's up, Richard?
Chris, before I get to Lindor.
Yes.
You know, a funny thing with the Yankees. They never bunt or move runners over because they say it's analytically not the right move. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you never know when you get a team in defense trying to field a bunt, the chances that they can mess the play up. But what they do, countless times I've seen this year, man on second, tries to go to third and is thrown out. I've seen FOP do that once or twice. Torres do that when the ball's hit to the left side and they're thrown out at third base.
More of a problem of a couple years ago, but I suppose it happens, yeah.
And what I saw yesterday was ridiculous. With Judge coming up, they're taking chances, running the bases.
Agreed.
That's analytic. That's analytically correct baseball.
No, it's not.
Right?
No, of course not.
Of course.
That's just two guys making a bone. Two guys trying to hustle and being and making poor decisions. That's all it is. It's two guys trying to hustle and do too much.
Right. But it still makes me laugh because.
Yeah, but that's not an analytic move. Believe me, there's no.
I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Because,
no, right.
Because bad baseball is bad baseball. And correct. I think
and
that,
I do think
the ghost runner at second should always be tried to move over to third.
I disagree. But
okay. All right. Lindor.
Yeah.
With Lindor, the guy should just shut up. Nobody cares that he's injured. The other guy, Luis Angel Acuña, is playing great. We want him back, but we don't want to hear that he's going to be playing hurt. Nobody cares. Either you come back and say the whole thing should be.
That's a little unfair. Tell him to shut up. Chris, he's asked a question, and he just said, if I come back, I'll probably have to be dealing with pain. He wasn't asking for sympathy.
What he should say, Chris, is the other guy's playing great. When I can come back and help the team, and I know I'm at full strength, and there's no risk of me hurting the team, that's when I'll be back. But let's just say our guy, our shortstop now, is playing great, and let's just keep it for the team.
I disagree. I don't want him to say, hey, you know, right now they're playing great without me. They don't need me. And, you know, unless I'm 100%, you won't see me. We'd kill him for that. We'd kill him for that. All it took was one loss against the Braves. We're clamoring for him. You need him. I bet you there are Met fans right there, right out now going, I don't care how you feel. Get your ass out there. He should come out and say, hey, look, they don't need me. I mean, I know I was having a great year and people wanted me to be the MVP. And the reason they all told me I should, or the only reason people were making the argument I was the MVP is because how much the Mets need me as opposed to how little the Dodgers need Otani. But turns out, I mean, on, you know, on second thought here and looking at what's going on, they don't need me at all. So I'm just going to chill and relax. And as soon as my back is 100%, maybe I'll come back. But even then, they're doing so well, I don't want to rock the boat. No. I think he said exactly what he should say. I'm doing everything I can to come back. You know, right now I'm dealing with some pain, and I understand that even if, you know, that I'm not going to be pain-free this year, but I'm hopeful I'll be able to get to a position where even though I won't be pain-free, I'll be able to play. I'm not getting on Lindor at all. I'm not getting on him for not playing. I don't know how severe his injury is or whether or not he is going to help or hurt the team. He was willing to pinch hit last night. Hopefully that means he's going to be willing to or capable of maybe at least DHing moving forward. But I don't think you think he should wait. The waiting is over. The waiting is the hardest part, and that's over. Because it's time to win. Win. John in Maspeth. What's up, John?
Hey, Steve, how's it going? You know, you definitely hit the nail on the head. You know, even though Yankees been having their issues, we've pretty much got the one seed locked in, and we probably going to finish with the second best record in baseball. Even though the Phillies are a half game ahead the Dodgers are a full game ahead, we hold a tiebreaker over Philly. So you know, with the World Series, you know, if it comes down to it, only the Dodgers.
Well, some of that. Let me get to the World Series. I'm worried about where they play it, The Yankees have been a better road team than
other teams.
Anyway.
Are having their issues. Like, look at Baltimore. Baltimore just DFA'd their closer.
No, I know.
And not the closer anymore, Craig Kimbrel, but he was their closer for most of the season, you know? And you see the Dodgers with all these injuries to the pitching staff. The Phillies have their issues. You know, the Padres are inconsistent, you know? And it's,
I mean, listen, there's no doubt that other teams have had their flaws, and we don't feel like, as of right now, who knows what team might go through the postseason like a hot knife through butter, and we have a different opinion of them. But right now, there doesn't seem to be that dominant team. There doesn't seem to be a team where, like, oof, they're going to be tough to beat. The Yankees are right there. And the Yankees aren't that team either. I think that's fair. But they're in an excellent position. And as much as I'm disappointed they didn't clinch last night, like, the outrage over the simplest things, like, it drives me crazy. It just does. Like, last night, they're down two runs in the sixth inning, and they go to Meza, a guy they don't pitch in high-leverage situations, a lefty they typically don't pitch in high-leverage situations. They're down two runs. They got Cousins on the IL. You all think you can't pitch Clay Holmes and you can't pitch Leiter. Who are you going to throw there? And like, the Yankees are punting the game. Here's Tim Meza. I guess the Yankees don't care about winning. Is this game 7 of the World Series? Like, do they not have another two games of this series, then another three games after it? Should they throw Weaver for four straight innings to try and secure a two-run deficit? I don't get it. Now, listen, I'm as frustrated as anybody they don't play Jason Dominguez. I've been screaming about Jason Dominguez for weeks. Jason Dominguez should be in there. I expect him to be in there. He played 5 out of 6 on the West Coast trip. He dropped 2 fly balls. And I do think for the first time, a bit of loyalty, or whatever you want to call it, crept in with the Yankees, who have a 6-game lead with 6 to play, and felt like if we're going to take time away from Verdugo, which I think they're going to in the playoffs, let's at least give him a chance to be on the field and part of the clinch and win the division, because he's been here with us all year. I think that was part of it. And sentimentality has no place in the game, and I don't like it. But it is what it is. It's one game. And then people getting mad that, you know, like I saw a bunch of people, and now Baltimore is celebrating. Baltimore is celebrating being a second-place team. Baltimore is celebrating in Yankee Stadium. They're not as good as the Yankees. Like, that's what they're celebrating. They're drinking second-place champagne right now. And we're mad at that. Oh, we allowed them to celebrate. You got to be kidding me. Anyone who thinks that, you're out of your mind. We've allowed them to celebrate in our stadium. You allowed them to celebrate. They're celebrating us beating them. They're celebrating blowing the division. I don't get it. I just don't get it. And we act like the Yankees have been bumbling idiots. They've been playing great. They've been playing great. Now, they have to tone it up. You can't have those mistakes. Totally agree. And I'm sick of seeing, this is like the third time Juan Soto has tried to get to second base. I believe he's made it all three, or at least two of the three. But, like, why are you opening up first base for Judge? Why? Why? And then, of course, Gleyber Torres, they can tell you all they want about, I'm trying to protect Soto. He's going back to the base when that ball is thrown. It's a hideous decision. He's out by a million feet. Why are you trying to protect the runner at second base when you're the lead runner at home? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? You could argue the reason Soto is going to second base is in hopes that the cutoff man cuts it off to protect you trying to score the run. That, like, none of it makes any sense to me. But that doesn't change the fact that the Yankees are going to win this division. They are going to finish with the best record in the American League. And it will depend on how they play come Saturday.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:34, McMonagle here with you. And you know, I wouldn't often talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates. It wouldn't be a subject that normally comes up. But I have to talk about this story because it bothers the hell out of me. Because we like to talk and get on the owners around here, right? For years, the Wilpons were cheap and this and that. And we still don't think Hal Steinbrenner spends enough money. And don't get me wrong, he could spend more. I mean, I think he spends enough to win. The Yankees should be able to win with what he spends. But considering what they make, their revenue. They could absolutely spend more. And if they tell you they can't, they're lying to you. They can. They don't want to. And I do agree they shouldn't have to win, but they absolutely can. But out in Pittsburgh, and they are finishing in last place again this year. Roddy Tellez, who, you know, is Roddy Tellez. He's got a 691 OPS currently. He's got 13 home runs and 56 RBIs. He's played in 131 games, and he has 421 plate appearances. And he was just designated for assignment with six games left by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And why would they bother with six games left to designate Roddy Tellez for assignment now? Because he's got 421 plate appearances. And at 425 plate appearances, so four more plate appearances, Roddy Tellez would have a bonus of $200,000 kick in. And the Pittsburgh Pirates would have to pay him $200,000. I believe their owner, Robert Nutting, is worth approximately, and you know, I don't know if these things, how accurate they are, quick Google search, told me $1.1 billion. $1.1 billion. And they just designated for assignment a guy who's been with them all year, playing for the lousy Pittsburgh Pirates. Who, what is it? It's got to be 10, 12 years since those a couple seasons where they were in the wild card game and lost every time, and McCutchen was winning MVPs. And they've given you a great young pitcher to look forward to, but ultimately, this team stinks year in and year out. They do nothing. They spend nothing. They give their fan base nothing. And they cut this guy four plate appearances short, six games left on the season, to save 200 grand. That's embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing. Now, I'm sure they'll spin it and tell you other reasons and young players they want to see for the last six games. And I'm, you know, there is a story that they're already saying that, and one of the kids that they're talking about is Joshua Palacios. That he's one that they're saying, oh, they're bringing him up. They want to get this young player in there for the last six games to get a look at him. He's 5 months younger than Roddy Tellez. 5 months younger. He's 29 years old. That's the young kid they needed to get up here to take a look at. That 29-year-old prospect. So that they could save $200,000. When they have bottom-of-the-barrel payroll every single year. And I don't pretend to know their revenue, nor do I care. The guy's the owner of the Pittsburgh Pirates, a franchise that's been around for forever. They don't come anywhere near the playoffs. They spend no money. And to save 200 grand, he's going to cut a guy four at-bats short of it with six games to play. To save 200 grand. It's a lot of money to me. It's nothing in the scheme of baseball. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I don't know why it bothers me so much, but it does. And I thought I'd tell you about it. 200 grand. We got to cut him with four plate appearances short because God forbid they have to pay this guy an extra 200 grand. God forbid. All right, let's get back to the calls. 888-808-1019. I mean, we got owners leaving Oakland. It's just... Talking about all the ways they've tried to make it work in Oakland while they're out looking for handouts to build buildings. Like, it's just... And now we got guys who are worth $1 billion who don't want to pay $200,000 when they pay nothing in payroll. Nothing. I don't know how much money they make, but I don't expect him. He's a businessman. I don't expect him to take loss after loss. But, like, you can't give a guy who's been with you all year $200,000? Like, it's crazy. Danny in Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. What's going on?
Good morning to you, Danny.
Yeah. The Yankees definitely beat themselves yesterday. I can certainly tell you that. I mean, those base running blunders and the pitching wasn't terrible. I mean, I do agree with you with the why the hell they put Mays in there, but when they got the other guys, but what can you do?
Well, see, I don't think you heard me correctly. I have no problem with putting Mays in.
Oh, okay.
I have no problem. What other guys do they have that they should pitch in the first game of a series where, by the way, they don't need to win this game? They could be swept by the Baltimore Orioles. They are going to win this division. Now, I know you want the number one overall seed, but this is in no way a must-win game. They only have a handful of guys with the Cousins injury to be high-leverage guys. Like, this is the bullpen. When you're down multiple runs in the fifth, sixth inning, who should they throw? Like, it just drives me absolutely bonkers. Like, that's punting on the game. I mean, Hamilton came in and gave up just as many runs. Like, then they scored runs, made it a one-run game, built momentum, and he went to some of the other guys in the bullpen. It's the sixth inning. They're down two. They've shown no life offensively other than a Judge home run. And, like, oh, how do you throw Mays out there? You're punting on the game. It drives me absolutely crazy. So I disagree with you. I have no problem.
Yeah, you're right. But I'd like to see Cortez do something today and at least give up less runs, because those three ones hurt us, you know, especially with the men they leave on base, you know, the six guys. I mean, that's been their problem most of the year, leaving a lot of guys on base, honestly.
No, I mean, listen, of course. I mean, that's what they do, right? When they don't win, it's because they haven't, you know, with runners in scoring position. And to Rich's point earlier, I'm not a huge proponent of the bunt, but Verdugo is your nine hitter, right? Verdugo hasn't done much this year. The top of the order right now is the best, arguably, and I know, you know, how we feel about Glaber, and certainly later in the game how we feel about Glaber, but Glaber's been one of the best leadoff hitters in the sport. He's followed by Soto and Judge. Bunting over second and third with the top of the order coming up makes a ton of sense. Like, that's a one time where, and you know Verdugo is a ground ball machine. He is literally breaking records for the most ground balls hit to second base in the history of baseball. The most ground outs to second base, and they banned the shift. Imagine what he would be doing right now if they could shift on him. He'd never get on base. So you have one of the better candidates for double play in the sport. He's your nine hitter. The top of the order is devastatingly good with Glaber going like this. You have first and second, nobody out. Bunt them over. That's the one time I will give you. I loved the bunt in that situation. I'm surprised Boone didn't do it, and I think it was a mistake. But, you know, he's letting them swing. It's a little early in the game to be bunting like that, but, and the whole point of playing Verdugo right now, here's the thing. Like, I know we don't want to hear this because they haven't clinched yet, but if you're going to play Verdugo, it's about letting him see if he could hit a little bit. Like, they don't need the game. If that was Game 7 of the World Series, I'd be screaming today. If that were a playoff game, the whole show would be, why the hell didn't you bunt Verdugo? But they're not, and it isn't. And part of playing him is to see if he can hit. I disagree. They shouldn't play him. Dominguez should be in there. We should be done with the idea of seeing if Verdugo can hit. It's stupid to me. But if they're going to do it, that's part of the reason why they're doing it. So why would you play him and then bunt him and not see if he can come through in that moment? Maybe you're trying to get him going. He comes through with a big hit, and he can tell, you know, believe me, I was ready. I was ready to laugh at all the haters if he hit a three-run home run, but he didn't because he doesn't. Bernadette in Oceanside. What's up, Bernadette?
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm just going back to what you said about the Pittsburgh. The Pirates.
Correct.
How I know they had this kid McCutcheon for years and years and years, and I know he was an awesome player. When he first, I think his rookie year, Mike loved him. He was like, we gotta get this guy. He plays down the field like nobody I've seen, blah, blah, blah.
Are you sure you're not talking about McCluffiness?
McCluskey. Or McCutcheon? Am I saying it wrong?
No, Andrew McCutcheon, but I think you're actually talking about a different Pirates outfielder that he accidentally called McCluffiness. For some reason, his name is escaping me. It's 4:44 in the morning. But yes, Andrew McCutcheon was their great player. He won the MVP. And during those years, where he was winning an MVP, 17, 18, whatever year it was, that's the brief moment where the Pirates are actually pretty damn good and won a ton of games, but couldn't get past the wild card game.
I think that everything with Pittsburgh and I've seen it with a lot of other baseball teams, all revolve around making the almighty dollar. And that's all they care about. The owners only care about the dollar. They don't care about the players, their record, their anything, their fan base. You have a team in Pittsburgh, the Steelers, who is owned by a family, I believe, the best of...
The Hunt family.
I was either B or H. But, you know, they put money into their team, and their team travels well. They sell out that stadium
Sunday. Rooney family. The Hunt is Kansas
City. Oh, yes, yes.
Rooney.
You're right. You're
I'm
right.
Sorry. That was a mind. Kansas City is the
Rooney. It's okay. I had a senior moment myself. Mm-hmm. It's okay. But you see how that they put money into their team, and look what their team does. They win, or they won in the past. And they travel well. Their fans love them. I mean, half of their faces are painted orange, yellow, and black. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's an awesome fan base. I mean, what's happening in Pittsburgh with the baseball team is, I feel so unfair to the fans because they don't have anything really to root for, except maybe what's near them. Chicago is the nearest big city.
I mean, the Penguins have done a nice job too over the years. They've done next to nothing. And baseball has that sport where it's that kind of regional sport. Football, they get the TV money. It's a little bit different. Putting a team together, there's a cap. Everyone's spending roughly the same. Like, they're not going to try and compete with some of the upper echelon teams. There's, you know, the games are all sold out. You sell the tickets. Baseball's different. You play 81 games at home. There's a million reasons why it's a different situation than the Steelers. But the fact of the matter is, I don't spend much time thinking about why the Pirates don't spend money. But when they absolutely could, they could certainly spend more. That's for sure. They could certainly spend more. But when they start nickel and diming their players, a veteran player who they signed to a contract, who's been here all year, who's having a somewhat, you know, decent season. He's got a 700 OPS. He's hit almost 20 home runs. He's been with you. He's been there with you all year long. He's four at bats shy of 200 grand. You got to cut him for 200 grand? 200 grand? I mean, come on. It's absurd. It's absurd that would even be on the forefront of their minds. It's crazy to me.
Start some trouble and call the Fan, 888-808-1019, powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS, live on Paramount Plus.
And not to beat a dead horse with it, but like, I just can't get over the 200 grand thing. Like, because you could have cut him at any point. You could have cut him before September and maybe let him latch on to a team that could have put him on the 40-man for a playoff push or something. Like, you could have traded him at the deadline. The Pittsburgh Pirates have been terrible all year. Like, they knew they weren't going anywhere. You wait until the last week of the season. You wait until he's four at bat shy. Like, cut him loose in August and let him try and latch on somewhere and get a job. I mean, he's played well for Milwaukee. I mean, he's had a career. You keep him on your crappy team until the last week of the season and then say bye when he's four at bat short? Like, literally, they waited the last game. Like, if he played one more game, they're like, tell me when he's one game shy. Like, oh, my God. Eddie in Rockland, what's up, Eddie?
Hey, Chris, what's happening, man? I got two questions for you.
Sure.
Okay. You know, Washington and Philly are on the road, and they've both got tough games. So if you're Coach McConnell, right? Well, what Brent calls you. Coach McDonald.
Yeah, he said McDonald. I guess it was a fat joke. I kind of just let it go, but
no, I just don't think he even knows your name.
Well, I mean, that's possible too. He's so self-absorbed in his social media chat.
Yeah, he's lost in the thought.
Yes.
And how would you attack this? You want an aerial attack? You want to establish a running game? Because once again,
against the Cowboys,
the Giants, Giants versus the Cowboys. Giants don't have really an identity to establish anything.
No, well, I mean, I think hopefully they're establishing their identity as throwing the ball to neighbors. I'm hoping that, I mean, because you're right, I don't know if they have much of an identity. The thing with the Cowboys is they haven't been able to stop the run the first 3 weeks. I mean, they've been getting gashed in the run game. So you'd like to think that you could line up and run the football. I would think that this game they're going to really try and make a strong attempt to run the football. And if you can do that, then maybe it sets up the play-action pass to Neighbors, or it sets up your pass game. But I would really like to see this game be kind of on the ground a little bit.
The opposite of what I think.
Really?
I think they should 75% shotgun and just air it out and see what – put it all on Daniel Jones and let him see if he could do it all on his own.
Yeah.
But here's my last one. You like quests and stuff, right?
I like what?
Quests, you know, like quests, the Lord of the Rings, the quests.
Oh, I like,
you
know, quests. Quests. Yes, I suppose that's one way to put it. I'm a fan of quests, yes.
Right. If you had to pick three callers, right?
Yeah.
And you have to put a game plan together, a quest, to go get P. Diddy out of jail and rescue him. Who's the three callers you're taking them with you?
Like, do you think he sat around all day coming up with that one? Like, how much effort did he come into to give me a get P. Diddy out of jail? If I was looking to make a jailbreak for P. Diddy, what three callers would I take with me?
You know, I actually think he probably has his own answer as well. Like, he would, if you let him stay for a few more seconds, you were like,
yeah,
I think the three, and right. Then...
I don't know, yeah. But I can tell you this. I don't know about that, but if I had to take three callers out for a car ride to the middle of the woods and let them out and leave them there, I have some thoughts. I probably have a better answer to that question, Eddie. And, you know, hopefully you have a compass with you. 888-808-1019. Oh, my goodness. But listen, yeah, I understand your point about wanting to air it out with Daniel Jones, because that's what we've started to see, and we're kind of getting addicted to it, right? You want to see Daniel Jones do it again. They've had trouble against the run, the Cowboys. Like, that's what's really hurt them this year so far. They've been gashed by the run. So I would like to think the Giants can run the football and that could set up the pass. I'm not saying abandon the pass, but I want to see, maybe this could be the week they try to really establish the run. And the other thing about the run is it creates time of possession. I want to keep the ball as much as possible because I'm concerned about the Cowboys' offense and passing game. I mean, right now, you got Adoree Jackson and Drew Phillips, who's played very well. Both of them right now didn't practice, and you got to assume they're not going to play the game. So I'm injured in the defensive backfield. I got Dak pissed off, who did have a comeback and played well in the second half of that game against Baltimore. Him and CeeDee Lamb with another game under their belt, getting back into rhythm. That Cowboy offense has been prolific in the passing game, and I got what was arguably my weakest group to begin with in the defensive backfield, and I got injuries to it. So theoretically, what's the best way in my mind for the Giants to win this game? Run the football, keep the football. Long touchdown drives. So I want to run the football this week. Now let's see if they can do it. Because I think this offensive line, it's easier, especially when a group is coming together, the pass block. That's a little bit easier. If you have some good offensive linemen, you come up with a good scheme with a new offensive, O-line coach from Oakland or Vegas, excuse me. And, you know, the pass block should be the first thing that a group can figure out. Now you want to get into run blocking schemes. First of all, you got to hold on to the football too. But I would think that's the best way. I want to hold the football as long as I can. I want long drives. I want the ball out of Dak's hands, out of that Cowboys offense. I don't want to give Micah Parsons an opportunity to blow up Daniel Jones if I become pass happy. I want to run the football, establish the run, hold the ball, long sustained drives, time of possession, keep Dak off the field, score touchdowns. Don't turn the ball over. That's how if I'm trying to get a victory for the Giants, that's what I would do. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it, and this game scares me, frankly, as a Giant fan. I don't feel very good about it. I don't feel very confident about this game at all. 888-808-1019. But we'll get more of that tomorrow as we'll preview the game for Thursday. And it was Nate McClouth was the young Pittsburgh outfielder who in 2008 had a hell of a year. Led the league in doubles with 46. He had 26 homers, 94 RBIs, and .853 OPS. And he looked like he was born out of Central Cast. I mean, if you were building a baseball player in a test tube, I mean, McLaughlin is exactly the kind of guy you'd build. Good way to end the show. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. I always do appreciate it. Even some of my favorite callers who I would take with me on quests. That's it for me, though. I'll catch you tomorrow again at 2 a.m. I don't know if we're going to get a Met game. In fact, I think we won't. But we should get a Yankee game, and hopefully they can pull this off and stop everybody from complaining. Win this division and get ready to win the best record overall one seed and go about their business and get ready for next Saturday. We'll get more into the Giants as well as they'll take on the Cowboys. Gotcha at 2 a.m. as usual. The next, coming up next is the warm-up show followed by Boomer and Geo. I'll catch you tomorrow. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Sports Radio 101.9 FM.